Speaker Gingrich. Thank you for being here.
Thank you all. Thank you very, very much. Is this working? Can you hear me? So this is not working if it's supposed to be. But I'll just try to talk a little bit louder. It's all right. Listen, let me say, first of all, I had two reactions. I do want to thank you each individually for welcoming me such a warm way. But I had two reactions to what Brad was saying. The first was, as he started working his way through the family, I thought maybe we were at a family reunion for the Zahn family. And then as he began to describe me, his description was so powerful, I began to get excited about hearing from the guy myself. So I'm not quite sure I can live up to what he was saying. I actually have a very simple message, and I asked Matt if it was okay to take questions, and he thought it would be fun to give you all a chance to direct the conversation. So I'm going to give you a very quick four-part introduction. First, I'm going to talk about why it's important to elect Brad. Second, I'm going to talk about where we are with a secular socialist machine running Washington and what it's doing. Third, I'm going to talk briefly about where we could be if we could liberate the American people from Washington and get back to creating jobs and get back to creating progress. And then I'm going to write back and talk to you for a minute about what you can do to elect Brad, because I think it's very important to recognize an amazing number of things are going to change based on what happens this November. I mean, people should not kid themselves. This is one of the most important elections in American history, because we have now had 2 years of what I called in my book, To Save America, a secular socialist machine, which has been steadily moving this country in a direction most of us don't want. And Brad represents one of the people who can turn around. New opportunity, okay. Brad, no, this is much better. Okay. Brad represents one of the key people who can help turn this country around. And so his election has an immediate direct relevance to your family, your children and grandchildren, the state of Iowa, and the United States. And that's why I think this is such an important campaign, and why I was so delighted to have a chance to come back out and to do something to help you. Now, why is it so important? It's important because at a time when people were tired of the Republicans, they elected, they defeated the Republicans in 2006 because they spent too much and hired Pelosi and Reid, who promptly began spending more. They then decided they would change presidents in 2008, and they voted for somebody who promised change we could believe in, and we discovered we'd elected somebody who wanted to change what we believe. And so we now have the most radical president in American history, working with a machine in the Congress to ram things through. You have a congressman in this district who voted 98% with Pelosi and 2% with Iowa. Now that by itself should be enough to explain where we are and why Brad Zahn matters so much. But I want to reduce all this to a very simple model. At American Solutions, we've been producing bumper stickers that say 2 + 2 = 4. I know it's bold. I guarantee you that if you walk around this district, virtually everyone will understand 2 + 2 = 4. And the ones who don't will be dedicated supporters of Brad's opponent. Because you cannot explain the current spending in Washington except assuming they've forgotten that 2 + 2 = 4. But it goes much deeper than that. Camus wrote in his novel, The Plague, that there are times when a man can be killed for saying 2 + 2 = 4 because the authorities can't stand the truth. And think about what we're seeing in Washington today. We can't have an honest discussion about what threatens us from overseas because we can't use any words which would accurately describe who threatens us. We can't have an honest discussion about controlling the border. We can't have an honest discussion about the Arizona immigration law. We can't have an honest discussion about the scale of spending. We can't have an honest discussion about the disaster and job destruction. This is a job-killing administration, which has now led us into, I think, the deepest unemployment cycle since the Great Depression. We need to be creating something like 280,000 jobs a month in the private sector, every month, until 2015, to get back to 5% unemployment. Last month, we created 80,000 jobs. This is a country of 305 million people. And we created 80,000 private sector jobs last month. Because this administration kills jobs. And they kill jobs because they are a secular socialist machine, totally out of touch with job creation. We meet regularly with small business leaders, the people who run hardware stores, people who have actually earned a living, people who have actually hired people. And it is amazing what they say. We were in St. Louis the other day, we met with 24 small business owners, four of which are worried that they may not be in business next year, several of which have downsized in the last 6 months, zero of which plan to hire anybody new. And you ask them why. They say, well, you look at the health bill, which is going to massively increase my costs. You look at the tax bill, which is going to massively increase my costs. You look at the energy legislation they want, which is going to massively increase my costs. You look at the size of the deficit, which is sooner or later going to start raising interest rates. You look at an administration which attacks businesses, attacks entrepreneurs, attacks people who create jobs. And you ask yourself, why would I take risks? Why would I go out and hire somebody? So this election, at the first level, is a key test. Do we want to do more of what is already crippling America, or do we want to change direction? Do we want to send somebody back to Washington who votes 98% with Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, or do we want to send somebody back who represents Iowa values and Iowa pocketbooks and Iowa interests? It's that clear a choice. And whether or not we win the election this November is a huge deal. And you got a great candidate for governor who all of you know personally. I mean, I think Terry Brent said personally he's met every person in Iowa 10 times. You have, I'm going to be back, when the fair opens, I'm going to be back with Chuck Grassley, who is a great candidate for the U.S. Senate. So we got a strong lead in, and now you've got a nominee who is going to be a great member of the U.S. Congress, and if you will help elect Brad Zahn, it's going to make a huge, huge difference. And it's going to make a difference because I believe with leadership in Washington that has common sense, we can get a lot done. Let me give you a simple example of 2 + 2 = 4 as a practical political philosophy. I'm going to give you half of a sentence, and I want to see what you think the second half ought to be. If you can't afford to buy a house, all right, let me test this out. Raise your hand if you agree. If you can't afford to buy a house, don't buy it. Okay. Now, look around. The room is unanimous. Now, think about at a deep philosophical sense what you just said. You just said that your government for 25 years has been lying. Your government's position has been, if you can't afford to buy a house, we'll waive your credit. If you can't afford to buy a house, we won't require a down payment. If you can't afford to buy a house, we'll only ask you to make interest only. If you can't even pay the interest, we'll let you pay less than interest only. And then it turned out, even if we did everything we could for you, the roof leaked, the electricity went out, an appliance went bad. And guess what? You couldn't afford to buy the house. Now, if you do that to one family, that's a personal tragedy and they go bankrupt. When you do it to a million families, it's a national disaster. Yet have you heard any political figure explain that what we have is a cultural crisis with a financial consequence? And it's true across the whole system. And yet, who do we have in charge of fixing it? Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, who are two of the major people lying to the country for the last 25 years about the nature of finance. It's that fundamental. And that's why this election is so important. Because if we elect Brad Zahn, and if across the country the current poll numbers hold up and we win similar elections, then Barney Frank will no longer be chairman of that committee.
and we'll begin to move towards real practical decisions. Now, let me give you a second example. I helped balance the budget when I was Speaker. We had the lowest rate of increase in spending over a four-year period since Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s. Including the entitlements and everything, we went up by an average of 2.9% a year. And I served with Greg Gansky, and he'll tell you, this was very hard work. But it required, go back to 2 plus 2 equals 4. Something all of you taught your children. Spend less than you earn. I know it's bold. It's out at the edge. But one of the numbers, I just sent an email this morning to one of my research associates. I'm trying to get a single number for the total amount of debt that Barack Obama would run up over 8 years, given his current projections. Because I want to put together, all of you have seen these ads on TV, if you have bad credit and you need counseling on credit, I want to put together a takeoff on an ad like that and show you the single number he's going to run up with his credit card in 8 years. And it's going to be staggering. And of course, the left is promptly starting to beat the drum to raise taxes to catch up with spending. And what we did, as Greg can tell you, when we were in charge of the House, is the opposite. We cut taxes in order to increase economic activity, in order to create jobs, so people went back to work, so they then paid taxes because they weren't on welfare, they were working. And at the same, so you have a double win. You're spending less on welfare and Medicaid and food stamps, and you're actually getting tax revenue from people who are working. And we control spending. So at American Solutions, we have developed a three-part economic growth plan because we think creating jobs and getting the economy growing again is the number one challenge in America. And it's the thing that, frankly, if the president had any understanding of this country, he would borrow James Carville's sign from 1992 that said it's the economy, stupid. He would put it up in the Oval Office, and they would open every meeting talking about the economy and getting back the economy. Instead, they're doing just the opposite. They're capriciously killing jobs every time they turn around. And this is going to become a continuing crisis. And so here's our program at American Solutions. One, we are for Congressman Jordan's 5 tax cuts designed to be the Economic Freedom Act. And they're very straightforward. The first tax cut is a 50% reduction in Social Security and Medicare tax, including the employer's match, so that every small business would have more liquidity, every person who works in America would have more take-home pay, and so 1 year reduction, which would also mean every American would come to realize how much they've been paying, and that would set the stage for the right kind of entitlement reform. Two, we believe in 100% expensing for small business, which means if you bought new productive equipment, you could write off 100% in 1 year, because we believe if you're going to compete with China and India, every American worker should have the most modern equipment with the greatest productivity so we can actually go head to head and win the competition. And only by giving American workers the most productive capability would we be able to, in fact, compete with China and India successfully. Three, I tell all of my liberal friends, you want to compete with China in job creation? It's pretty straightforward. Match them on capital gains tax. They have zero. Now, at zero capital gains, the amount of investment you'd have in America, the number of new factories, the number of new businesses, the number of new jobs would be breathtaking. Because we're still potentially far and away the most powerful economy in the world. We're far and away the most interesting country in the world. We have a much better structure of law. I mean, if you ask people, you know, would you feel safer putting your money in the US or China, they'd put the money here. But to get that money here, you've got to have a tax code that encourages the money to come here. Fourth, if you want American companies to compete in the world market and create American jobs, reduce the corporate tax rate to the Irish level, which is 12.5%. If American corporations were paying the same level of corporate income tax as Ireland, you would find American corporations competed everywhere on the planet successfully. Today, it's like we have a runner. And in fact, that runner is carrying a 60-pound weight, because we've burdened them with so many taxes. And it is so difficult for us to make investments and to move capital around. Finally, we believe, and this is in Congressman Jordan's bill, that we should permanently abolish the death tax. We believe that it's... We believe that the death tax is fundamentally immoral, because we believe if somebody goes out and spends their entire lifetime doing everything right, if they work hard, if they're frugal, if they save, if they build up a family nest egg, we think it is wrong for politicians to step in on their death and take away their money and give it to somebody who didn't spend their entire lifetime doing the right thing. And I think the death tax is a cultural issue more than an economic issue, and it is fundamentally, profoundly wrong to take money from families. You should not be required to go to the undertaker and the IRS the same week. It is simply wrong. So the first part of our American Solutions package is economic growth. The second part is controlling spending. Government today is the fourth bubble. Remember, we had a bubble in information technology in 99, we had a bubble in housing in 2007, we had a bubble in Wall Street in 2008. Well, the biggest bubble is government. If you look at the size of the Greek problem, you look at California, you look at New York State, you look at the scale of Obama's spending, we clearly, every modern democracy has politicians who have promised more than they can deliver. And we have to go through from city council to county commission to school board to state legislature to the US government. We have to go through and find ways to do things better, to do them less expensively, and to be able to, in fact, return government to a size that's affordable and in the process make it effective. And if you study, as we are, what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico, it is a case study in incompetence. Now, part of the problem is BP, and BP clearly made a huge mistake, and they should be required to pay off every single penny of damages that they have caused. So I'm absolutely committed to doing the right thing to make BP responsible for its damages. But if you look at, after the Exxon Valdez, we passed a law when I was the Republican whip that says the President of the United States is in charge of any oil spill offshore, and the Coast Guard will be responsible for a plan to deal with oil spills. And if you look at that law, which is a 1991 law, you would think 19 years later that the government should in fact have had a plan for the Gulf. We have thousands of wells in the Gulf. And so you should have a plan that assumes sooner or later something bad can happen. Instead, it turned out all of the best technology for oil spills was overseas. There's no American technology comparable to Holland or Norway or Sweden or Japan or Taiwan. Then it turned out the president didn't want to let them in because it violated the Jones Act, which protects American labor unions. And so the oil's coming out. We're not allowing the technology that'll work to come in. And then it turns out that the Corps of Engineers doesn't believe you should build berms, which is where you build like a sand island by dredging. So they don't want to let Governor Jindal in Louisiana build berms. Well, the Coast Guard plan called for berms, and apparently the Coast Guard and the Corps of Engineers had never sat down together to figure out that they ought to have the same plan. Now, this stuff has been going on for 90 days. And so it's not just a question of more or less government. What we need is a smaller, affordable, effective government, which eliminates the waste, eliminates the incompetence, requires focus on achievement, and actually gets its jobs done. And whether that job is controlling the border, or that job is in fact making sure that, I think we're eventually going to have a guest worker program where people who are here who are willing to work and pay taxes or have a legal status as a guest worker. But I will be quite candid. I would outsource the entire program to American Express or Visa or MasterCard because they actually know how to run a program like that, and there is zero possibility the federal bureaucracy could do it. Now that's how bad it's gotten. And so our second provision is, let's control spending, let's cut spending, let's reform government, and let's get back to a balanced budget, which is what we did when I was Speaker. We had four straight years of balancing the federal budget, paying off $405 billion in federal debt, and we could get back to that, I believe, within 3 to 5 years. But what it requires doing is giving up all of Obama's big dreams, all of his big plans, all of his giant bureaucracies, returning power back home, and frankly, it means recreating localism where you have control of your local school board, you have control of your local town, you're engaged with your local county, you're solving problems here at home, you use your churches, your synagogues, your voluntary organizations, so that once again we have an America which is run by its citizens not an America which is dictated to by its bureaucrats. It's a fundamentally different model. The third part of the American Solutions Program is very straightforward. We believe if you want to fix the economy and you want to work on national security, you have to have an American energy program that uses American sources of energy. Many of those are renewable. We're very much in favor of ethanol. We're very much in favor of future biofuels. We're very much in favor of wind and solar where appropriate. But we're also very much in favor of using nuclear power, coal, oil, natural gas. I mean, it's amazing. Because of new science and new technology, in the last 6 years, we have discovered 1,300 years' supply of natural gas and shale. If you go from up around Buffalo, New York, all the way down through Dallas, Texas, you have this enormous deposit that we could not commercially do before 6 or 7 years ago. And so when people say to you, we're about to run out of something, it's just baloney. We have three times the amount of oil that Saudi Arabia has in shale in the Rocky Mountains. They have dramatically increased, I think 2,500% increase in the North Dakota Bakken formation over what the original geological survey said was up there. But you have a government which is deeply, bitterly opposed to developing American fuels. And this is very important for a practical reason. If you're sending $500 billion a year overseas, that could be here at home. I mean, my position on ethanol, and this goes back to when I was speaker, and when both Chuck Grassley and Jim Nussle said that I helped intervene and save the ethanol program, my position was very simple. If I have to choose between the money going to Iowa, South Dakota, Illinois, or going to Venezuela, it's pretty easy for me to pick. Now again, I mean, that probably lets you know I'm a conservative. And I have a bias in favor of American money staying in America to create American jobs. Because I don't think of myself as responsible for making sure that everybody else in the world gets rich at our expense. Now, one last thing I just want to comment on, then I'm going to take questions. But I think it's central to why I'm so committed to Brad running and winning, and why I so much want your help in the Brad Zahn campaign. And it was captured for me in a interview that President Obama did fairly early in his administration when he was overseas with Chancellor Merkel and President Sarkozy. And a reporter asked him about American exceptionalism. And his answer, he said, well, I kind of think America is exceptional, but I think the British probably think Britain's exceptional, and the Greeks think Greece could. And I thought to myself as a historian, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't even understand what the question is. And let me explain why. American exceptionalism grows out of a historic document. I talk about this a lot in To Save America and in a movie and a book I did earlier called Rediscovering God in America. Because it's central to understanding who we are. It's a central problem of dealing with a secular socialist machine. Our Declaration of Independence is very, very clear. It says, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, there are three parts of this. I mean, again, I'm not giving you a theological speech. I'm not trying to talk about religion in any sectarian way. I'm talking as a historian about a document you can see in the National Archives about which there's universal agreement. I mean, nobody doubts that this is what the words say. So the first thing is, what is the first principle of being an American? Principle which is more exceptional, more radical than any other country in history is, the power comes from God to each one of you personally. You are personally sovereign. Which is why Jefferson erases the word subjects in his first draft and writes in the word citizens. Because you're not, I mean, it's very hard for the Obama White House to understand this. You are not subjects. The bureaucrats aren't supreme. They are supposed to be public servants, not public dictators. When the Secretary of the Interior said that they were going to put their boot on the neck of BP, I frankly thought he should be forced to resign that day, because Americans... Any government official who believes they can put their boot on one neck believes they can put their boot on your neck. And that is fundamentally antithetical to the American model. And it starts with the Declaration of Independence. There's a second part. It says the rights are unalienable. That means no judge, no bureaucrat, no politician has the power to take away your rights. And that's why when the Ninth Circuit Court ruled that saying one nation under God in the school pledge was unconstitutional, my response was to suggest that that was so alien from the American tradition that we needed to replace the Ninth Circuit Court with judges who understood the American experience. And by the way, there is historic precedent for that. Under Thomas Jefferson, the Judicial Reform Act of 1802 eliminated 18 out of 35 federal judges. Over half of all the federal judges lost their jobs. They weren't impeached, they just abolished the offices, quit paying them. And several of those judges tried to file a suit in the remaining 17 courts saying it was unconstitutional, and the other judges said, "Are you crazy? If we agree with you, they'll abolish our court." So I'm not nearly as bold as Jefferson, who abolished over half of all federal judges. I would only abolish the Ninth Circuit as a warning, and I think that would probably do the job to get the message. There's a last part that I suspect virtually everybody in Iowa, I'm not sure about Governor Culver, but almost everybody in Iowa understands. And it is that the Declaration promises you the right to pursue happiness. It's a very important concept. First of all, happiness in the Scottish Enlightenment meant wisdom and virtue. It did not mean hedonism and acquisition. Second, it's the right to pursue. Doesn't say you're entitled to happiness. Doesn't say we need a federal department of happiness. It doesn't suggest that we need happiness stamps for the less happy. It doesn't propose that we need politicians redistributing happiness so that those who are overly happy will have part of their happiness given to those who are under happy. And I would argue that if we could get back to a focus on the work ethic, a focus on savings, a focus on local responsibility and local citizenship. And if you just went through every law applying those tests, does it encourage you to work or discourage you? Does it encourage you to save or discourage you? Does it encourage you to take personal responsibility locally, or does it take away your ability to have local responsibility? You could fundamentally, in a matter of a year or two, reset this country on a path towards prosperity, towards security, and towards once again being the central beacon of freedom on the entire planet. And I think this election, you, each one of you, if you go home, when you go home today, if you Twitter, I want you to send out a tweet about being here with Brad. If you do Facebook, I want you to put on your Facebook account, you were here with Brad. If you have an email list, I want you to send every single person in your email list a note that they need to help Brad. It's that practical, it's that doable, it's that simple. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to be helpful with. So I have a couple minutes, if I might, I'm going to take questions. Is that right?
Okay, what about life? You said we have a right to life.
I said we have a right to life.
Yeah. Okay, what about, what can we do about abortion? 4,000, 5,000 abortions?
Well, okay, I think first of all, the place that Senator McCain had a huge opportunity on was to simply go straight at then State Senator Obama's vote in favor of allowing abortion doctors to kill babies who were born alive, because it was totally untenable, and 85 or 90% of the country thinks it's absolutely wrong. And I think that we should consistently and methodically be in favor of the right to life. I happen to believe that life begins at conception, and that therefore you are endowed by your creator with certain inalienable rights. I also happen to think that when women are pregnant, I think of them as carrying a baby. I don't think of them as carrying a thing or a legal entity of an inappropriate nature. I think of it as a baby. And so I think that's the key question. Just ask your friends, is this a baby or not? So if it's a baby, you get into all sorts of logical next steps. If it's not a baby, then you have a totally different argument.
Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir.
Every day we wake up and we have to spend half our day looking at what Washington is taking away from us today. Mr. Obama never apologizes. The Democrats never apologize. Why do we as Republicans consistently attack our own people? We make a representative apologize. We're calling a shakedown a shakedown. I mean, why do we continually force these people that speak the truth back away from them?
I want to go back to my point that Camus wrote. There are times when saying 2 + 2 = 4 can get you killed because the authorities can't stand the truth. All too many Republicans are intimidated by the national media and intimidated by the Washington power structure and believe they have to somehow appease it. I don't think you can appease it. I mean, when I wrote To Save America and the subtitle was Stopping Obama's Secular Socialist Machine, I thought that was a fairly vivid and fairly clear drawing the line. And this last week, James Carville, who many of you know, the Democratic consultant, published a poll in which 55% of the country now agrees that Obama's a socialist. Now, I think that's a fair amount of progress. My answer to all this stuff is simple. You're not going to convert these people. You're not going to communicate with these people. They are who they are. They are doing what they're doing. The only answer they're going to understand is to defeat them. And you start right here at home. The fact is that the incumbent congressman here voted over 98% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. Now, how can you come home to Iowa, having spent 98% of your votes on behalf of Obama and Pelosi, and pretend you represent Iowa values? There's not a single poll in this state that says that voting for a $787 billion stimulus that no elected official read was a positive thing. There's no poll in this state that says voting for Obamacare was a positive thing. And I think we just have to have the courage to stand toe-to-toe and say, this is wrong and you should be defeated because you have not earned the right to represent Iowans because you don't. Yes, sir. I'll tell you what, you help elect Branstad as governor, you help re-elect Grassley as senator, and you help elect Bradzon to the U.S. Congress, and I'll come talk to you after that's done. But for this year, you get those jobs done, and you take back the Senate and the House here locally, and then I'll be glad to come back and talk about next year. Yeah, look, I think this is a misnomer. I believe if you elect a majority that knows what it believes in, you can do almost anything. Now, I think for 2 years you have a president who's going to veto things, but I think he's going to be a one-term president, so we just have to get through the 2 years. For those 2 years, my advice to the congressional Republicans is going to be, don't pay for any of his programs. I mean, he can veto repeal, but he can't coerce money. So you just pass appropriations bills that finance everything except his programs. He then is going to have to fight you, and he's going to have to go to the country to say, I want the Congress to spend more money to build up a bigger deficit for programs you don't like. Now, I don't think he can get it done. I think you could cut off Obamacare about January 20th in the new Congress by just saying, we're not going to fund it. You know? So. I have to run, but I want to go back to where we started. All of this comes down to winning in this November. This November sets the stage for the future. This November sets the signal to Washington. We need for you to go out and do everything you can to elect Bradzon. This race really matters, and you can make a big difference. Thank you very much.